Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Okay, let's unpack this. In genomics, well, for a long time, we've faced this really tough choice. It's like, either you map all the gene activity, the whole transcriptome, maybe 20,000 genes, right?
Right.
But the picture you get is kind of blurry, like seeing a city from way up high in a plane, or you zoom right in, get that super sharp single molecule detail, but you can only look at a handful of genes you picked beforehand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Historically, that was the deal. If you wanted the comprehensive view, you lost the fine detail, the spatial resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted that pinpoint accuracy, knowing exactly where each RNA molecule is sitting inside the cell, well, you lost the context of the whole genome. It was basically a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
A really fundamental trade-off that's held back, you know, unbiased discovery in tissue biology for ages.
And that really gets to the heart of the problem we're digging into today. I mean, how can we really understand something complex, like how a disease starts or how cells talk to each other, if we can't see all the players?
Right.
Down to every single RNA molecule, and crucially, where it is in its natural home, its physical context. You need both, don't you?
Yeah.
The big picture and the tiny detail.
Precisely. And until very recently, the methods available forced this compromise. You basically had two camps. First, these spatial capture or tagging techniques.
Okay.
These are sequencing-based. They give you genome-wide coverage. So, yes, you capture pretty much all the genes. But their spatial resolution, it's often quite poor. You lose the cell shape, the subcellular stuff.
Oh, it's like having a perfect list of all the ingredients in a kitchen, but absolutely no clue where anything is actually stored.
That's a great analogy, yeah. Then on the other hand, you've got the image-based methods, think NGS or in-situ sequencing.
Right, the high-res ones.
Exactly. Well, they give you that beautiful single-molecule resolution. They preserve the cell morphology, which is fantastic. But they typically required you to choose beforehand.
You could only look at maybe hundreds, or if you really pushed it, a few thousand genes. You had to have a hypothesis. Guess which genes were important before you even started the experiment.
Which limits genuine discovery, right? If you have to guess first.
Totally. And that's the scientific gap, the chasm that this new work we're discussing today just leaps across. We're talking about a technique called RE-FISH.
RE-FISH?
Stands for Reverse Padlock Amplicon Encoding FISH. And the claim is pretty bold. It provides whole genome coverage without sacrificing that single molecule resolution.
Right.
And get this, it does it without needing traditional bulk sequencing.
Wow. Okay. So breaking the trade-off.
That's the idea. And here's what gets really interesting. This deep dive is based on the work led by Siwon Wang's team at Yale University School of Medicine. They've really pushed the boundaries here in spatial transcriptomics.
Okay.
Their resource, the paper, it's titled Sequencing-Free Whole Genome Spatial Transcriptomics at Single Molecule Resolution. And it came out in Cell on November 26, 2025.
Got it. So Yale Cell 2025, R-A-S-H-E-S-H.
Right. And the core innovation, RE-FISH.
Sure.
It cleverly combines the strengths of methods that existed before, like ISS and MERFISH, but couldn't really be put together effectively. The mechanism, that's where the genius lies. And
yeah,
it's all about how they designed these things called padlock probes.
Okay, padlock probes. I know those are usually used to identify the target RNA molecule. So how did they reverse it, like the name says?
Good question.
Yeah.
So traditional methods that use rolling circle amplification or RCA, think star map, maybe the ends of the padlock probe itself bind directly to the target RNA sequence.
Mm. Okay.
RE-FISH flips that. They design the padlock ends to be invariant. They're constant sequences. Mm. Instead, a separate priming probe binds next to the target RNA, and that kicks off the process.
Yeah.
They basically inverted the standard padlock strategy.
Huh. Invariant ends do priming probe.
Okay. And why is that flip so important? What does it enable?
The beauty of this new design is that it makes the whole system compatible with something called oligopool amplification.
Oligopool amplification. Yeah. And that amplification step is the absolute key to making this incredibly cost-effective. It's what really opens the door, democratizes the whole field.
Right. Cost is always a huge factor. How much cheaper are we talking?
Okay. Let's look at the numbers they mentioned, because they're pretty staggering. A probe library for older RCA-based methods like StarMap targeting the whole genome, you're looking at around $58,000. $58,220.
Wow.
And that might only support a few experiments.
58 grand for maybe, what, three experiments? That's nearly 20,000 bucks a pop.
You got it. Now, compare that to the RE-FISH probe library.
Yeah.
Targeting 23,000 human genes, the whole transcriptome, essentially. the cost. Around $5,132.
5,000 instead of 58. Okay, big difference already.
Well, wait, there's more. That RA fish library can be amplified, reused over and over. The estimated supports at least 2,000 experiments.
2,000.
So the cost per experiment plummets. It drops down to about $158 per experiment.
Okay, hold on. From almost $20,000 per experiment down to $158.
That's what they calculate. 223-fold cheaper per experiment.
My grant budget just breathed a massive sigh of relief. That's not just cheaper, that's transformative. It takes whole genome spatial profiling from something only a few elite labs could dream of to a tool that, well, many more researchers can actually use.
Exactly. It lowers the barrier dramatically. So once they've used AIR-E fish to amplify the signal from the RNA in place, how do they figure out which signal belongs to which gene?
Right. You have potentially 20,000 different signals floating around.
They decode it using a multiplexed fish approach. It's similar in principle to MERFISH, another powerful imaging technique. It relies on a really flexible digital barcode system.
Barcodes, okay.
Yeah, think of it like assigning a unique light-up sequence to each gene. They used, for example, a 94-choose-4, hamming distance 4 code book. Fancy terms. But basically, it's a very robust way to label thousands of different molecules so you can tell them apart, minimizing signal overlap.
And dealing with that signal overlap must be critical if you're looking at 23,000 genes at once and still want single molecule precision. How dense does it get? How do they handle that?
That's a key point. The way the barcoding works, in any single round of imaging, they're only lighting up about 4% of all the target transcripts they've labeled.
Only 4%.
Yeah, a small fraction.
Yeah.
And that low percentage ensures that the glowing dots are, on average, spatially separated.
Ah, I see. So you don't just get a big blob of light.
Exactly. That spatial separation is crucial. It prevents the fluorescent signal from gene A accidentally being mistaken for gene B just because the RNA molecules happen to be sitting really close together. If they merge, you lose that single molecule resolution that makes RAE fish so powerful.
And that makes total sense. Keep the signal sparse in each snapshot. Okay, let's get to the results. Did it actually work? Did they get that whole genome resolution?
They did. The validation started in standard human A549 cells. They profiled over 23,000 genes. And listen to this. They detected, on average, almost 3,750 RNA molecules per cell.
Wow, per cell?
Per cell, coming from nearly 1,300 unique genes identified within each cell, on average.
And how does that compare to, say, standard sequencing?
That's the crucial comparison. Those detection numbers are right up there, comparable to what you'd expect from state-of-the-art bulk RNA sequencing methods.
They have the address for every molecule.
Exactly. They have the precise spatial location, the XYZ coordinates, for every single one of those detected molecules. So the first big win was demonstrating subcellular insights. RAE fish could correctly classify transcripts as being primarily in the nucleus or in the cytoplasm.
Okay, basic cell biology check.
Right, and it worked. As you'd expect, long non-coding RNAs, LNC RNAs, showed a higher average ratio of being in the nucleus compared to protein-coding genes.
Makes sense.
And they specifically saw that classic nuclear LNC RNAs, things like FER, NEAT1, MALAT1, they all showed those high nuclear ratios, just as they should. It confirmed the method's accuracy, right down to the subcellular scale.
Okay, so it works in cultured cells. What about real tissues, more complex environments?
Great question. They moved into mouse liver tissue, a classic model for complex organ structure. And yes, they successfully mapped the major cell types. They clearly show the well-known liver zonation pattern.
Right. The difference between cells near the portal vein versus the central vein, periportal versus pericentral hepatocytes.
Exactly. But here's where it got really fascinating. They looked beyond the hepatocytes, the main liver cells that usually get all the attention in zonation studies.
Ah, interesting. What did they find in the other cell types?
This was really cool. RAE fish revealed that this zone-dependent gene expression pattern isn't just a hepatocyte thing. It extends to all the major liver cell types.
All of them.
Yep. They identified anywhere from 65 to over 200 zonation marker genes per cell type. Every major cell population in the liver showed distinct transcriptional profiles, depending on whether it was in the periportal or pericentral zone.
Wait a second. Isn't that kind of a big deal? Usually the focus is almost entirely on hepatocytes for zonation. Does this imply we've been missing a huge part of the picture by just focusing on them?
It certainly suggests the entire tissue ecosystem is spatially specialized, much more than perhaps previously appreciated. For example, they looked at cholangiocytes, the cells lining the bile ducts.
Okay.
They found specific markers for them. And the negative zonation markers, the ones associated more with the pericentral zone, were enriched for genes involved in things like retinol and terpenoid metabolism.
Which fits perfectly with the pericentral zone's known role in detoxification, right?
Exactly. It shows the functional specialization extends to these other cell types in a spatially defined way.
Okay, so you've mapped the zones for all the cells. The real power then comes from using that spatial data to look at how cells interact, right? Cell communication. Did they look at that in the liver?
They did. The analysis showed a really clear preferential interaction happening between cholangiocytes and immune cells, specifically leukocytes, but only in the periportal region.
So location matters for interaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just these cells are near each other. It was functional. The cholangiocytes that were right next to leukocytes actually upregulated components of the MHC class II protein complex, genes like H2AB1 and CD74.
MHC class II, isn't that involved in antigen presentation? Showing things to the immune system.
Precisely. So this suggests that cholangiocytes might be doing more than just managing bile. They could actually be performing antigen-presenting functions, talking directly to immune cells, but specifically in that periportal zone.
Wow. That's a genuinely novel spatial hypothesis generated straight from the RAE FISH data. Very cool. Did they try it in other tissues too?
They did, to show its versatility. They looked at mouse placenta around embryonic day 13.5, Again, RAE FISH clearly mapped out the three main zones, the labyrinth, the junctional zone, and the decidua.
Complex tissue.
Very. And within those zones, it could differentiate two types of macrophages just based on their location and their specific gene expression signatures.
Macrophages in the placenta.
Yeah. They found decidual macrophages in the decidua zone, showing signatures related to inflammation, both pro and anti. And then in the labyrinth zone, they found Hofbauer cells, HBCs, which are another type of placental macrophage. And those cells showed upregulation of genes involved in angiogenesis, blood vessel formation.
Which makes perfect sense for their known roles in placental development. But RLA-E nails down their specific location and confirms their transcriptional state in situ.
Exactly. They also tackled the mouse lymph node, incredibly dense, complex immune tissue.
Yeah, notoriously tricky.
Still, RIE clearly mapped the expected spatial segregation B cells in the cortex zone, T cells in the paracortex zone, and it identified gene expression related to immune regulation, like finding SCLEK1 positive macrophages located preferentially within the B cell zones. It just worked across really diverse and challenging tissue types.
Okay, that's impressive validation, but they took it one step further, right? Into functional genomics with something called Perturb-AE FISH.
Yes, and this is potentially huge. They adapted RAEFISH so it could directly read out the location and identity of short engineered RNA molecules, specifically guide RNAs, the gRNAs used in CRISPR gene editing screens.
Ah, so linking the gene edit directly to the spatial outcome.
Precisely.
Kay.
This tackles a major headache in image-based CRISPR screens. It's always been hard to reliably link the genetic perturbation, which gRNA went into which cell, to the resulting spatial phenotype, like changes in gene expression in that specific cell and its neighbors. Often people use complex viral barcodes, which can be unreliable.
Okay.
With Perturb RAEFISH, they could directly visualize the gRNA itself within the cell using the RAEFISH chemistry. They achieved a really good detection rate for these gRNAs.
Meaning they could confidently say, this specific gene edit caused this specific change in gene expression at this specific location.
Exactly. It directly connects the functional perturbation to the spatial transcriptomic readout.
So stepping back, what's the big picture here? What does RAEFISH really mean for the research community?
Well, I think it gives biomedical researchers a really versatile, much lower cost, and generalizable tool for unbiased discovery. Mm-hmm. We're potentially moving past the era where you had to pre-select your target genes for high-res spatial studies or pay exorbitant costs for whole transcriptome mapping.
It opens up hypothesis-free spatial biology at scale.
That's the promise. But like any new technique, we have to ask about the limitations, right? Does this amplification step inherent in RAEFISH introduce any trade-offs compared to, say, a super-optimized targeted method like standard MERFISH?
Yeah, that's the critical question. Is there a cost to that amplification and cost saving?
There is a modest one acknowledged in the paper. They note that RAEFISH likely has slightly lower sensitivity and maybe precision compared to those highly optimized targeted approaches.
Okay.
And they also flag that issue of signal crowding, especially for genes that are expressed at really high levels, the high copy transcripts.
Right, the busy beach problem you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. If you have tons of RNA molecules packed really tightly, some might merge into a single diffraction-limited spot, leading to undercounting of those specific transcripts.
But importantly, did they suggest ways around these limitations?
They did, which is key. Mm-hmm. They propose combining RAWFISH with other techniques, like expansion microscopy.
Ah, physically making the tissue sample bigger.
Right. You physically swell the sample, which increases the distance between molecules before you image them. That could directly address the signal crowding issue for dense RNAs, boost detection efficiency overall, and they see a clear path forward.
So it seems like this technique is really poised to uncover completely new spatial patterns and mechanisms in all sorts of biological systems, health, and disease.
I think so. To really boil it down, the take-home message is that RAWFISH doesn't just tweak existing methods. It successfully merges the best of two previously separate worlds.
Genome-wide scope and single-molecule precision.
Exactly. The comprehensive scope of whole genome transcriptomics, finally united with the pinpoint accuracy of single-molecule imaging.
And critically, by smashing that historical coverage versus resolution trade-off, and doing it at a drastically reduced cost, RAWFISH makes unbiased discovery and functional screening truly accessible. It puts these powerful spatial tools into the hands of many more labs.
Which really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What does this shift truly mean for the future? For personalized medicine? For finding new drug targets? When we can finally systematically uncover the spatial role of potentially every molecule within any tissue?
A powerful thought to end on. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.